Good evening. Ladies and gentlemen, we are beginning the third meeting of the, what are we calling, Expanded Budget Committee for the 2016 Tompkins County budget. And I want to start out the meeting with a few words from the county administrator, if I could do that. Joe?
Thanks, Jim. This is a follow-up to something that we talked about at your last meeting or the meeting before, which is an update on the pension rates. We launched the budget on a Tuesday early in the month and said at that time one of the factors that was affecting the budget was an expected increase in pension costs, which we had taken some of the edge off by building in a vacancy factor when we actually put the budget numbers together. So on Tuesday, that was the assumption that I think everybody in New York State was making. In fact, if anything, we might have been on the generous side of that estimation because we did take a vacancy factor into account. On Thursday of that same week, 48 hours after we launched the budget, the controller surprised everybody by announcing that pension rates were not going up, they were going down. And they were going down by a fairly significant amount. So we now know that the pension rate for next year is 15.5%. Now, that's 15.5% of payroll. That's almost 2% of payroll less than what we had assumed when we put the budget together and the budget that's in front of you. So I said at that time, give us a few days to calculate what the impact is on 2016. We've done that, Kevin and I, with some help from Rick Snyder. And when you factor in the effect on payroll and you take the local dollar impact of that, because anything that we do, if it's spread across the entire county, there's a state and federal reimbursement factor that you have to calculate for DSS and several other departments. But it looks as if the savings will be around $592,000. It's a significant savings. So in terms of capacity, I would consider that additional capacity. I'm not going to pull our budget back and resubmit a new budget based on this new estimate. It's simply a factor that you should keep in mind as you review the budget. It could translate into everything from a reduced levy to additional expenditures without affecting levy, so you have a range of options available to you. But again, we wanted you to know with some precision what the effect of that change in pensions was before you got too much farther along in the process. And again, it's in the range of $592,000.
Carol?
So I understand that it doesn't make sense to have you redo the budget.
Right.
Does it make sense to have you look again at the administrator's unfunded over target requests?
Well, you know, I really, at this point, the budget is with the legislature. You can look at those. So there's nothing that I said no to that is not in front of you right now. So there's nothing that was held back, and we said, just forget about it. We don't have enough money to even consider it. Everything that came to me is now in front of you. So this is really information that will be, I think, helpful to you as you look at those OTRs. Certainly I have some thoughts, but really the document is now with you, and this is an opportunity that is really with you at this point.
Anyone else? Thank you for that, Joe. Hopefully everyone will keep that in mind as we go through the process and take a look at the OTRs that were not funded and some other things. I thought very interesting that we could look at clearly a levy decrease. That would be make some sense to an awful lot of taxpayers. At any rate, we're going to begin with the City of Ithaca, and we have with us tonight Suki Tabor, and she is here to talk about a request from the city, and I think it was for $30,000, if I'm not mistaken. And go ahead, Suki. Welcome to the Tompkins County Legislature.
Well, thank you very much for letting me come and speak with you today. I'm here on behalf of the city, like Jim said, to talk to you about managing and maintaining our waterfront parks for all of our residents to enjoy, and also to speak about our over-target request in support of that for $30,000. Parks have a significant impact on the life of our residents in Tompkins County. I'd like to share a quick video with you that talks about the benefits of maintaining strong and vibrant parks, and you also have a flyer that goes along with that.
In every community, there is a place where people of all backgrounds can gather to talk, exercise, learn, or relax. In every community, there are parks. The economic value of park systems are vast. Using just 5 studies completed in the last 5 years, municipal park systems located in Ohio, New York, North Carolina, Washington, and Colorado delivered more than $5.4 billion in economic value. Parks have economic power. Parks protect and conserve biodiversity while keeping our air and water clean. Parks have environmental power. Access to parks and recreation facilities aids in the control of obesity, helps diminish the risk of disease, and can increase life expectancy. Parks have health power. Parks increase social capital. Park-like public spaces encourage residents to leave the isolation of their apartments, socialize with one another, and form lasting ties. Parks have community power. In Macon, Georgia, a revitalized park that included new programming and beautification efforts reduced incidents of crime and violence by 50%. Parks have safety power. Parks have the power to strengthen communities, transform lives, and protect the future. Fact is, parks are the most powerful aspect of every community. Share the power of parks with yours. Learn more about the power of parks at nrpa.org.
So in Tompkins County, we're really fortunate to have two wonderful waterfront parks, Cass Park and Stewart Park, that offer significant benefits to our residents and visitors. With waterfront access, pavilions, trails, a rink, tennis courts, a pool, playgrounds, a children's garden, picnic areas, and sport fields, these parks provide a wide variety of recreation and leisure opportunities for residents of all ages and abilities to enjoy in our community. In addition to the facilities, programming at these parks includes lessons, sport leagues, tournaments, birthday parties, weddings, festivals, and other special events. Local clubs and organizations, summer camp programs, youth and adult athletic groups, families, and individual residents from every municipality in Tompkins County use these parks on a regular basis. During the 2014 pool season, Cass Park staff handled over 18,600 admissions to the pool. That averaged 316 admissions a day. During the 2013-2014 rink season, the Cass Park staff handled over 28,000 daily admissions, averaging 203 admissions a day. In front of you, you have both a memo talking about this over-target request, and you also have a chart that is an example of the distribution of daily rink and pool admissions at Cass Park, broken up by municipality, just so that you can see what a wide variety of communities are represented by in as far as users of the parks and facilities. What we find in this report and other reports of park and recreation program use is that approximately a third of the users of these facilities are City of Ithaca residents, a third of them are Town of Ithaca residents, and the other remaining third is residents from other municipalities within Tompkins County. The really smallest percentage of use is from users outside of Tompkins County. All of this use requires a significant investment to fund the equipment, staffing, utilities, and supplies used to maintain these parks and their recreational facilities. Successfully managing these parks requires intermunicipal cooperation. The city and town of Ithaca have maintained a strong relationship to support the waterfront parks and facilities over the years. In order to sustain this partnership and financial support, additional partners within Tompkins County are needed. The town of Ithaca, which had historically contributed $111,000 annually, reduced their contribution to $82,000 in the 2015 budget. The town's contribution is at risk of being further reduced in 2016. If additional support from other government entities in Tompkins County is not found. The City of Ithaca requests that Tompkins County contribute to the cost of maintaining these waterfront parks and facilities in the amount of $30,000 annually. This support will help keep our waterfront parks strong and viable for all residents to use. We have seen the interest in waterfront parks and recreation programs and facilities grow over the years. There are many stakeholders interested in revitalizing our parks and our recreation facilities. Both Cass and Stewart Park have groups known as Friends, Friends of Stewart Park, Friends of the Ithaca Youth Bureau, that are very interested in helping to make this happen. With the interest and growing usage of the parks, the city hopes to bring in a consultant in 2016 to conduct a parks and recreation study that will look at things such as shared costs, oversight and management, cost recovery, and planning for the future. This study would result in a master plan that would create a roadmap for us to use for ensuring an appropriate balance of park facilities, intermunicipal cooperation, programs and services now and in the future. We would be very happy to discuss this piece further should you be interested in partnering with us in this endeavor. Public spaces such as parks have the power to change how people live and how they feel about their community. I hope you will take the long view of the benefits to our residents as you consider this $30,000 over-target request in support of the maintenance and management of our waterfront parks.
Thank you. Well, I'll get to you in a second. I did not tell, all of you can see it, but on page 35, section 4, it was priority 4, not recommended by the county administrator, but it does have a paragraph, reason for request and effect if not funded, that you might want to take a look at. Will, you have a question? Go ahead.
Thank you, Jim. That was question number one. Susan, can you put this into context, in a sense of what is the city currently spending on those two parks overall?
Well, we have spending on the parks happening in two different departments. So we have both DPW, Department of Public Works investment, as well as Youth Bureau investment. And I don't have a dollar figure right with me, but that's something we would be happy to bring back to the legislature if you'd like that information.
Okay. So just to be clear, what this $30,000 done is basically funding this study to look toward this pathway to shared support and oversight? Is that?
$30,000 would help us to bridge the gap since the town of Ithaca has reduced its support.
Okay. So it's not literally anything changing. It's just literally trying to plug that gap.
Yes.
Okay. As a town of Ithaca resident and somebody who regularly uses your parks and always feels just a little guilty because I'm paying not a dime, you know, I think it's a very reasonable request. I hope we can find space for that.
Carol, do you have your hand up?
Yeah.
Okay. You and then Mike and then Mike and then Dan. Go ahead, Carol.
I'm a city resident who uses the parks frequently, in particular Stewart Park. And I am wondering, well, several things. One is, because the town of Ithaca is reducing its budget, is not a good enough reason for the county to increase ours. But I do wonder if you have figures. I believe in doing this because it's a resource for both people from all over the county, particularly Stewart Park and Cass Park, and then for people, particularly Stewart Park, for people from outside of the county entirely, for visitors. It's one of the places one can go and see our lake and, visit Ithaca. Touts the fact that we are in the Finger Lakes, and it's short of Stewart Park and or driving out to Myers Point.
Excuse me. Do you have a question, Carol?
So I have two questions. One is, do you have figures that you could get us? Is there any way to find out how many people who aren't city residents use Stewart Park?
Because Stewart Park doesn't have any admission fees and that kind of thing, there really is no statistics to talk about, you know, what's the percentage of out-of-county versus in-county use or distribution by municipality. We do have it in terms of the pavilions, in terms of when people rent one of the pavilions at Stewart Park, where there is a residency question. question related to that.
But do you then go on to ask them where their other people who are going to join their event are from? Because that's something that might be worth tracking at some
point. We don't
point.
Currently track that at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it might be something worth asking people in the future to make the case. And then the other question I have is, do any other municipalities provide support for either of these parks?
Not at this time.
Thank you.
Michaeline.
Follow-up sort of to what Carol was asking. You're not the first folks that have been in here because of reductions at the town of Ithaca level. And that is very, very troubling. And what I find most troubling in your situation here is, as I understand it from what you've said, that the town of Ithaca won't keep up its support unless the county puts in money. Is that what the town of Ithaca is telling you? And I'm not blaming you, but I'm just trying to figure this out.
Well, I think what's happening is because, you know, the usage of the parks really is countywide, the town has looked closely at that and said, you know, all the folks who use it need to be contributing. So I think it's some of them saying they need other folks in the mix to help support the parks, but I don't think they've specifically said, oh, the county has to come in or anything like that. I don't think I've heard any discussion about them trying to dictate other budgets from other folks.
Maybe I misunderstood your comment earlier when you said that the Ithaca funding was contingent upon the county funding.
It's contingent upon us finding support from other government entities.
Other support.
You guys, it could be other municipalities.
Right.
It's not, you know, them
Thank
coming
you.
To you guys saying, you have to do this or we're pulling out.
I understand. Thank you.
So.
Mike Sigler.
I have to say, I want to thank you for your report, and I don't blame you for this at all. I just find that the town of Ithaca's behavior in this is shameful. I mean, their townspeople use this. They're cutting their funding on the backs of county taxpayers. I would have been much more open to supporting this if they weren't trying to close the power plant in my town. They want to close the largest taxpayer in my town, which is going to hurt my parks, and yet they're cutting all over the place, it seems, the town of Ithaca. So I don't know. Maybe we can get some of these elected guys in here. Maybe Herb can come down and talk to us and say what's going on in his town, that they're cutting all these programs.
Dan?
Hi, Suki. What department would this money be going to?
At this point, we would be looking at using it in the Ithaca Youth Bureau department, but we do have the component at Cass Park, which does include some maintenance and DPW folks. So we'd really be looking, you know, at maintaining the budget to support the programming and the stuff that we have going on there currently.
The Youth Bureau does a lot more things than just the park, so this would just be going to the general Youth Bureau fund?
This would be focused on going into the Cass Park.
Cass Park, going mm-hmm. to the Cass Park fund.
Yep.
Thank you.
I have a question. I spent 13 years in city government, so maybe it's urban legend, but there was always something told to us in the 70s and 80s that there could not be admission charge in Stewart Park, and that was in the deed covenant. And that was a question, if Ari was here, I would have asked him that we research that and see if that's true or, again, urban legend about, you know, how that park can be used. But it was always my impression one could not charge for using the park.
There is some issues with that. I don't know how much of it is urban legend and how much of it is actually part of the deed. But I do know that given the current setup at Stewart Park with the railroad tracks that cross right across the entrance, the fact that the entrance onto Route 13 is right there as well, you know, I think it would not be as simple as being able to set up a booth and charge admission to Stewart Park as we might think at first.
And frankly, I'm not looking for that. It's just something that I think should go in the thinking of
Absolutely.
Not only looking at this now, but that whole park system in the future related to the county.
And that's the kind of stuff I think we would look at really closely in the process of developing the master plan.
Okay. Well.
So Jim, I was actually at an event for STVB where we were inaugurating by bicycle the new waterfront trail, and that was repeated again as we were having it presented. So what urban legend or not, I think it's widely believed. Question for you, Susan. Am I right that some counties, in fact, have their own park systems? I don't know what about adjacent counties, but do you happen to know that? Or
Yes, there are a number of counties that have county parks and rec departments, mm-hmm. and I think that would be one of the things that we would be open to exploring should we be in the process of a master plan.
Okay. And Mike, with all deference, I feel compelled to defend the town of Ithaca, where I formerly sat as a board member. For years, they were willingly giving support to this park system, not because they had to, but I think because they want. They are in a tough budget crunch, and I think your suggestion that we invite Herb now to discuss that with us is reasonable. But I did not hear them saying, oh, it's got to be the county. They're saying we can no longer be the only ones. I think it's a highly, highly reasonable stance on their part.
Joe, interject. Onondaga County owns parks. Am I correct?
Yes, Onondaga County has several county parks. I actually think the rule is counties do have parks. It's the exceptional county like ours that don't have parks.
Right. Thank you. Carol.
So in working on the budget and coming to us with this request, did you work with anybody at the county as to which aspect of the parks budget to come to us for? And either way, are you open to sharing a little more of the budget? Would it make sense to maybe share a little more of your budget with us, not necessarily right now, but to send it? And if we were to consider or leave it more open as to which aspect of this we might feel most comfortable supporting.
Absolutely. We would be very willing to come back with more information if that's something that you all wanted to see. My director apologizes. She's out of town visiting a brand-new grandbaby, so that's the only reason she's not here.
Congratulations on the grandbaby. I'd be interested in seeing ballpark. You know, it does not to the it's not to be the dollar, but figures about what it costs the city to maintain each of these parks, and maybe program versus maintenance versus capital, whatever categories you already easily have, and then the first part of my question is as to whether you consulted with anybody here as to which aspect of this. To be asking for a support of the $30,000 for?
I think there's long been an interest in and a growing interest, like I said, in the waterfront parks and with the Friends of Stewart Park. That's been a very active group with the waterfront trail opening recently. That's been really strong. I think with the other aspects of our recreation programming, our rec partnership has fairly strong support community-wide, and so, when the cutback came, directly related to the parks, we were really focused on that aspect. And Liz has been meeting regularly with Joe and Kevin Sutherland and the mayor and a number of different folks trying to, sort through this and figure out what our options might be.
Can I ask Joe a question then? So,
sorry?
Can I ask Joe a question? If we were to consider this request, is there a place that you think it's most appropriate? They're asking for the essentially the youth programming, but would it be more appropriate for us to be considering something out of another part or for another aspect here in terms of the fact that we don't maintain any public spaces of the silk?
I think your question is a good question. I think that would be something good for the legislature to have, to decide if there is going to be support, should it be tied to a single element or a specific set of elements as opposed to a general subsidy, which is really what the request is right now. So if, I think through Suki and maybe Steve Thayer, we can get a breakdown of the budgets for both those parks, we can bring that back to the legislature. So as you're thinking about this further, we'll have that information available. In terms of my suggestions on where to tie it, no. And the conversations that we've had with Liz and Kevin have been procedural, how to bring an OTR forward to the legislature, those kinds of things. So.
Thank you very much, Suki. I think we're finished here this evening. We will certainly... We will look forward to talking about this in the future, not only parking the money, if there is money specifically one place, but I think the bigger question overall, county parks and city parks.
Wonderful.
Of which we don't have any and you do. So.
Well, we very much look forward to continuing this conversation.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming over. Up next is assessment. They are in Section 4, page 9. They have two OTRs, 1 and 2. One was funded by the county administrator, and one was not. Welcome, Jay.
Thanks for having us here tonight. I appreciate the rescheduling so I could see my kid's first soccer game last Thursday, so thank you for that. It was a much better time for me. So here's our recommended budget. It appears that we are down in our funding when local dollar amounts by $54,000, or about 5% this year. A couple of key budget points. This is really a maintenance of effort budget for us. Are we missing a slide? There's really a loss of one FTE that's on the books. For 2015, we were going to hire another appraiser. However, our retirement that should have happened in 2013 still hasn't occurred yet. So as soon as that retirement happens, then, you know, we'll be down to 11 and a half. And probably in 2015, I'm going to be coming back to you in order to have that appraiser position put back into our budget. We have a very active real estate market right now, and with the staffing level that we have and the experience that we're going to be losing, I would anticipate for 2017 coming back for that other another valuation staff. With our revenue, it's unchanged, but it's changed very much. Our tax bill printing revenue is down. We'll be contracting with a company out of Batavia to do school and town and county tax bill printing. But we've made up for it with the town of Covert revenue. An odd thing here, we really didn't have expenses associated with the tax bill printing. As we had money left over, that's when we bought paper. So as we found a little bit of money in our budget, we bought paper in bulk. And if you go out into our back office, we have plenty of colored paper out there stored in boxes. Our major influences on our budget, you know, obviously it's within the real estate market. You know, we've made a reduction from 15 employees back in 2009. When the real estate market was kind of slow, but it's picking up. You know, we saw about a $693 million increase in these last 3 years. The increase in new construction, building permits, we receive about 2,400 building permits that we watch per year. The last 3 years, we saw 444 new residential houses within the county and 901 apartment units. Now, granted, there's about 500 or 600 apartments that were demolished in that number, but for us, it's easy to demolish a building. You hit delete, and the building goes away. But to collect those new units takes a little bit more time. So our new lumber figures for the last 3 years are there. We've added about $100 million in 13, 155 in 14, and 144 in 15. So we've have a significant amount of field work to go out and data collect. And another thing about the real estate market that we're dealing with is it's a very or much more complex than it used to be. We have to deal with income tax related write-offs when we're dealing with commercial properties, 1031 exchanges, all sorts of financing, you know, NYSERDA rebates when you're looking at construction, income tax credits. The idea of a commercial investment isn't what it was 5 years ago, 15 years ago. It's a lot more in depth to go into research why commercial properties are doing what they're doing. So that takes a lot more of our time. Along with that, we have an increase in the number of real property exemptions that we deal with. Exemption work takes 52% of the assessor's time. I have 2.5 people in my office that deal with real property exemptions. Tammy Van Orman and J.C. Becker do an amazing job processing all of the senior exemptions, veterans exemptions. We do have Sarah Delmage as well, who does an amazing job out front. Her customer service is untestable. But we do have the baby boomers hitting 65 years of age. Typically, we would receive about 200 new applications a year for the Enhanced Star Senior Exemption, but we're about 415 new applications a year now. Normally, that would be easy, but with the Enhanced Star, it involves income, so we have to break out their income tax return, verify that, and that's just getting more and more complex as well. So that just adds to our office staff. Another thing we have to deal with is New York State solutions to the high property tax that we all have here. It's not as simple as New York State thinks, or every time they come out with this new program, they always say it's going to have minimal impact on the local assessing units. However, all we do is we get phone calls. How is my check calculated? How come my neighbor got $6 more than, you know, the $14 I got? And then starting in 2016, the phone call we're going to get in March and April is how much was my check last year? Because I have to claim that on my income taxes. So that's going to be another piece of research that we'll have to deal with. And we already received some in 15 because some property owners in a few of our municipalities received their school rebate check last fall. But most people in Tompkins County didn't receive their rebate check until February of 15. So along with the, we'll have the new or the middle class with children rebate check. I don't know if there's a better name for that, but I know I appreciate it to get my $350 check. But we still get phone calls of where is it? Why didn't I get it? Did I really get it and cash it and didn't realize it? The tax cap rebate checks, which most school districts got last year except for Ithaca City. And then this fall, again, the majority of municipalities will be eligible for this rebate check. We have the STAR registration process to go through and to continue to go through. Anyone who bought a house since March 2nd of 13 are going to have to re-register with New York State. And, of course, we get all those phone calls. And now there's the new STAR refund check. If you have a STAR exemption, you'll get a $185 check this fall right in time for elections. And then it'll be phased in as well in the next 2 or 3 years as well. But each one of these involves information from my office, whether through what number of taxes are on there, who has exemptions, and I have to report that information to the Department of Taxation and Finance and also to the Comptroller's Office. I've been working with the Comptroller's Office in an automated way to handle this. But with 57 counties and upteen number of ways to record and send data out there, that's kind of going a little more difficult than we had anticipated. And then it appears to be an increase in demand for our real property assessment data. Our data was designed to be able to levy taxes. You know, my data is collected to be able to value property, which is then able to produce tax bills in order to fund the different municipalities. But now New York State wants to use it to collect their tax liability. If you have a more of a $4,500 tax liability, you don't get your STAR exemption. They take that savings and knock down your tax liability. If you have over $500,000 worth of income, you don't get your STAR exemption. There's a lot of things that New York State wants to use our data for, and I'm afraid of what they're going to try to turn our data into, and I'll get into that. We have a lot of internal and external requests for reports. Can I get all of the owner-occupied properties that have more than 10 acres so that we can look at solar-mounted ground-mounted solar panels? It's just the complex reports that we're looking in order to get. Or can I find two-family houses where the second unit is only a studio apartment? It's very complex reports for us to try to run, and it doesn't translate over easily to what someone else is looking for. But those reports come to my desk, and I find more and more of my time spent doing these reports rather than doing other work as well. Unfortunately, it falls to me just because there's not anyone else to do it. And then we have the pilot agreements. More and more pilot agreements are starting to involve the non-standard, here's your 100% exemption your first year and then 90% moving down. It involves some percentage of rental amounts that's paid in taxes. And I've also tried to stay on top of pilots that are granted by local municipalities. Towns and villages can also grant exemptions as pilots for through the public housing finance law. And in searching through these, we found that a lot of these pilots haven't been billed in prior years. So we've been trying to work with the towns in order to get the income and expense data from that property owner, verify that it's correct, and then also verify what that pilot payment should be. So that's taking a little bit more time as each one's a little bit unique and what's definition of income. So here's how our FTEs have gone over the years. We've slowly built up to what I thought was going to be a good number of 12 and a half. However, we're really at 12 FTEs right now. I delayed hiring one appraiser in anticipation of that retirement. So hopefully, not hopefully, because I don't want to see him leave because he's such an asset, but he's paid his due and should go on. But we'll, hopefully we'll be at that 11 and a half employees shortly. But you can see back in 2000, we are at 19 FTEs. We have two over-target requests. One is to continue to fund our third office staff position. In our target budget, I could fund a project assistant for 5-6 months, but it would be great to have this person there on a year-round basis. We've always had a third, fourth. We've even gone to 6 office staff people back in our 2008 reval to help deal with appointments and exemptions and the informal reviews that we have. But we've taken on more sales processing work. When the county clerk upgraded their document management system, our link to them was broke. So rather than being able to take the data they're entering into their system and bring into ours, we now have to retype all of that data yet again. The synergy that we had between our ImageMate product that I know you all use constantly was broke when they went off to their system that they use now. So that's just taken us more time to research deeds, research maps. The increase in reports, tax bill processing, I hope nothing happens to me in December. or I'll be laid up in a hospital with my laptop processing tax bills for you. That'll be fun. And telephone coverage for life occurrences with two office staff individuals and three phone lines coming in and three public computers. There's a lot of time that Irene and I are out there in the front office as well, even just for lunches, vacations, family appointments. Irene and I spend a lot of time in the front office taking away from the work that we do or should be doing. Granted, I like answering the phones, but I'm not good at it. I spend too much time talking to the person, and same with Irene as well, I think. But Irene does know how to transfer, so that's good. Our one over target that is not supported is an upgrade to our CAMA system, computer-assisted mass appraisal. I love this. New York State has says that they are committed to a new CAMA database and that it's a priority for them. But it could be 2 or 7 years down the road, depending on who's discussing it. They use a very antiquated database that was designed in 1994. It's just a very poor database. I don't want to get into technicalities, but I have to keep an old XP laptop on my desk just to be able to process some of the reports and tax bills that's required. This would have been to buy the system that New York State had an RFP out for, but then backed away at the last minute. They're very hush-hush in their RFP process. You couldn't even get out of them who responded, how many people responded, or why they have backed away from their RFP. And then depending on who you talk to, whether it's the Office of Real Property Tax Services or their Office of Information Technology, who knows where it's going to be or how long it's going to be down the road. But then I worry, is New York State going to create a system for them to administer their STAR exemption? Or are they going to create a system that's useful out in the field to where we should be able to take advantage of tablets and, you know, touch screens and being able to not duplicate work? But sorry if I went too long.
I did not. Questions? Mike and Carol. Mike, go ahead.
Well, Jay, that was depressing. But very, very important that you told that to us. What I'm wondering about is the state aid that we used to get. Where are we with that now? We were getting $150,000, $160,000 a year at one time. What do they do to help us out of that $150, $25 every time we file a deed?
I'm not exactly sure what that goes for, but New York State does allow for up to $5 in a revaluation year if you haven't done anything in the previous 2 years. So they went from an annual aid, which rewarded you for doing what you should do and reappraising each and every year, to rewarding those places that didn't do anything in the 2 years, but then you would get up to $5 in aid, depending upon who else did a reappraisal in that year. So if New York City did a reappraisal, you would get $1.86 per parcel. So I don't know if Joe and Rick would appreciate me budgeting $5 per parcel in 2017 for work that I had to do in 2015 in hopes that I would get $5 per parcel. But even to obtain that $5 per parcel, you have to remeasure at least two sides of a building once every 6 years. I would need more than $150,000 a year to pay to have that done. Now, I've said this before, buildings don't grow. So that's just the wasted requirement that New York State requires assessors to do. But for places that have turnover and a new assessor comes in at the end of their six-year appointment, I can somewhat see that occurring. For us, where there hasn't been too much turnover, it's just a requirement that's worthless.
But can you give me an idea what how much state aid we got last year or in this current? We don't know this current year, but what did we get last year?
It's simple, zero.
We got zero.
Correct. We do not get any sort of state aid. We do get 25 cents per sale. So we have about 2,000 sales, so we get about $500.
Carol.
So two questions. Are there any fees involved that would come to you for the essentially consulting work that you do for the IDA? When there are pilots, do those requesting the pilots pay any fees for processing, or is there any other mechanism? Because I know that's been a lot of extra work this year. Okay.
No, I don't believe so.
Do other counties or assessment entities charge that kind of thing?
I don't believe so. I don't know how well other assessors work with their county IDAs, since most of them are town employees.
Okay. Interesting. I believe the IDA does pay other staff who work with them, the TCAD staff. So, and maybe it's something to explore in the future.
Excuse me. We have an MOU with the IDA has an MOU with TCAD, and as you well know, the county gives money to that operation. Of course, they work for us. Go ahead.
Well, they do.
We have an MOU with them, Carol.
Okay, but sometimes there are developer fees that are charged.
And developers pay fees.
Come with requests.
Pay fees to the IDA.
But,
they don't pay
it's
for
just
assessment.
A thought.
They don't pay for assessment.
Okay, may not go anywhere, but it is a thought as we're thinking about where can we recover some of our costs. And then I have a question about this OTR. Is this a one-time acquisition of a system? If so, can we do that as a one-time or a one-time over 2 years to spread it, since you don't have to get it yet? And if not, explain it a little better, please.
Unfortunately, this is what the service charge would be per year on a software as a service program. So this would be our yearly maintenance. If we were like any other county, this is another way where we're penalized being countywide assessment. New York State only charges us $2,100 for the use of their software. Other counties, which when you sum their town charges for the software, can range up to $45,000. So this is, you know, we could make the jump if I was paying $45,000 a year to pay $60. But to go from $2,100 a year to $60, that's a pretty significant jump there.
Any other questions?
New York State, okay.
Anything else? Well?
Joe, maybe you could comment why this didn't make it up in terms of your sense of...
I think Jay just explained it. And it's almost like the discussion earlier about should the county really be put in the place of kind of backfilling the withdrawal of aid or insufficient aid from other levels of government. That's the way I viewed this, too. This is a state responsibility. And if the state hasn't done what it should do, we ought to be talking to the Albany folks about that. To wait 2 years to avoid a $60,000 a year cost, if that's the best case, that's... To me, it's worth the wait, and it's a very high price. $60,000 a year is—it seems like a very high price in terms of what it would cost to produce benefits to the county. I just couldn't justify.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So, I mean, to me, I don't see it as directly analogous because we're not back really helping the state. We're helping Jay, Jay's operation, but. You know, if you feel you can muddle through and you can, but I'm not sure what that really means in terms of your efficiency.
When I submitted the budget, it was more on the 7-year down the line phase. Since then, there has been somewhat of a reorganization at the Office of Real Property Tax Services. Hopefully, there'll be more. and they realize that this is really is a priority to them, and they should be committed. It's amazing how many times I hear those two words when you talk about the V5 database. But after hearing that, I'm a little more encouraged that it may be 2 years down the line. 2 years we can kind of muddle through. But the fact this database doesn't work on Windows 8, Windows 10, there's going to be new updates to the service that it runs on. This doesn't have too much longer of a life.
Thank you.
Wait. Last question.
So I'm still not understanding. Is mass appraisal a better system? Is that a system that you want to go to, or that you'll go to when the state forces you to go to it?
Well, it's really what we do. We do mass appraisal. When you look at an individual appraisal, you'll spend one day on one property. You know, we may value 150 properties in a day. So we're really using mass appraisal techniques, and the software is called computer assisted mass appraisal software.
Okay, so you want it. You're not just doing it because when the state says you have to do it.
Correct.
Okay.
Anything else? Thank you very much, Jay. Thank you, Irene.
Thank you.
Up next, Human Service Coalition Community Agencies, Section 5, page 25, OTRs 35, 37, 39, and 40. And welcome, Kathy.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Hello.
I know everybody here. I'm Kathy Schlather, Director of the Human Services Coalition. This is my Associate Director, Nancy Burston.
Nancy Burston.
Shouldn't take up too much of your time. Just tell me which button. That one. Here we go. I guess we're going to start with the community agencies. So as everybody here knows, we have a citizens review committee that looks over all the recommendations or looks over all the requests from the agencies when they come into our agency. We start our process. We send out our forms in the beginning of April. The requests are due back approximately the beginning of May. The review committee goes over it. It then goes to the they make a recommendation to the Human Service Coalition Board. The board approves it, and then it goes to Joe in July. So these were the members of this year's review committee: Diane Cohen, the director of Finger Lakes Reuse; Renee Farkas, who's been there for many years from Cornell Public Service Center; Jeff First, first year on the review committee, strategy management consultant; John Lemley is part of our board; Linda Matteo is a community volunteer. She used to be the executive director of the Park Foundation; and Ron Provost is also a member of the coalition board. There we go. And here are the budget figures. Of course, if it looks a little bit different, not that anybody is following this from last year, but last year was quite a bit higher. This year, OAR has been removed from the agency budget, and Deb will be doing her own presentation after this one. So the funding that goes to the agencies is a combination of county funding and city sales tax funding. So this is a combination of both. Major influences, there have been a number of changes in leadership in the agencies this year. Most people probably know this. Better Housing for Tompkins County and INHS have joined forces under one director. Paul Mazzarella is now the director of both agencies. But the agencies are both keeping their own identity. And so they right now refer to it as an affiliation. And one board, Better Housing, will have an advisory board. And going forward, Downtown Ithaca Children's Center has a new director, Denise Gomber. Lifelong, Lucia Sacco, I think I say that right, Multicultural Resource Center, Fabina Colon has taken over for Audrey Cooper. And the rescue mission, it doesn't have a, the rescue mission, which runs our shelter and our friendship center, actually is part of the rescue mission whose mothership is in Syracuse. But Rich Bennett has taken over the running of the center, and he did that on June 1st. I thought that interesting fact. And Southside Community Center has a new director in Davi Mosey. So there's been quite a bit of turnover. For most agencies, when there is turnover and new directors, there's a lot of support and support that they need along the road. So this is probably a little more than normal this year. Major influences. So we keep hearing, and these haven't changed a lot since last year, or probably the last couple of years, the need for more intensive case management to help clients navigate through the system and stay connected. And that's it. We have a lot of case management that can help people get housing, that can help people sign up for services. But the real hard work is making sure that people stay in housing. They stay connected to services. When people have little bumps in their life, that they have somebody they can get in touch with and somebody who can help them get back back on the road to success. Always, and I think we just have to keep talking about this and talking about this, the lack of safe, affordable housing options and the need for more supported housing options that never seems to go away in this community. The complexity of the need, you still hear that from agencies, that people are presenting with a lot more complex needs than they used to. And the last one's just a little, it's been kind of like a little blip on the radar, but, and I put lots of funding for local programs in the sense that, especially state funding, you're finding is becoming much more regional. So that can be good or bad. Lots of times when a state will say, you know, I don't want to fund 53, separate programs. So I want you to join with two or three of your local counties, sometimes seven or eight of your surrounding counties, and have one program. We'll fund one program, and you decide where it's going to be. We've been pretty lucky having that type of funding come to Tompkins County, but I have noticed a slight trend that they seem to be looking to fund bigger programs, city programs, Long Island, Rochester, Syracuse, Buffalo. We had one agency with one program that lost their funding altogether because they were told they had to do numbers that we just couldn't reach in this community, and they weren't allowed to go in with anybody else. They pretty much just said, we're going to fund the big centers, and you can send people there if you can, which is very difficult on clients. So that's kind of something I've just started to see, and I think that we're going to have to keep an eye on to make sure that we continue to get the programs funded locally that we need to. These were the recommended over targets. We didn't have a lot. We were able to meet most of the requests through increase in city funding and in slight increase in the county. Catholic Charities, I'm starting from the bottom for no particular reason. Catholic Charities started a navigator program last year to have a little more intensive case management, help people get housing. By the time we asked for information, they had only had the program going for about 3 months, so there wasn't really any opportunity to get some really good data on that program. So we recommended another year of one-time funding so that we could assess the program next year and see the impact it's made. The food bank asked for an additional $5,000 in target. And again, this is money that goes, the food distribution network asked for an extra $5,000, asked for an additional $5,000. This money goes to a line of credit with the Food Bank of the Southern Tier and is divided among 15 different food pantries throughout the county. The one over-target request that was not supported by the recommended budget was a $4,000 one-time request from the Food Distribution Network to support a pilot program next summer that they're putting together. And it is called the Southern Tier's Healthy Harvest Program. And this program is about getting fruits and vegetables more into the pantry, working with the clients that come to pantries, helping them with recipes, helping them with education about using more fresh fruits and vegetables. And they were going to run it June, July, August, September, and they requested the $4,000 to help get that program up and running in Tompkins County. And that was not recommended in the budget. Oops, sorry. I believe that then that's the only over-target request that did not get funded.
Questions for Kathy. I'm Mike Ziegler.
I'm just wondering, has INHS ever got funding through you before?
Yes, they did. For a long time, when the dark time started and we had to cut funding, I think they got about $12,000. It was down to that point. And we had to cut funding from the agencies, and one of the cuts we made was to INHS. So,
but it's always been a separate entity from Better Housing.
It has. This funding that went to Better Housing and now will go to INHS is for a senior repair program. So INHS had a similar program to repair housing in the city. Better Housing did it throughout the rest of the county, and now it's all going to come under one program.
So,
Mike, please use the microphone.
Sorry, I'm sorry, Jim. So it's just that program that's coming under one director, or
nope,
the whole deal?
Nope, the whole agency. Yep, they went through talks throughout this year and came to an agreement. So now Paul is the director of both agencies.
I mean, I'm not questioning Paul's capability. I'm just wondering if that's a conflict of interest for the county. Whereas, I don't know. INHS competes for land and stuff with other developers. They're a developer. And Better Housing is not a developer, is something else. It's a different kind of organization.
Right. So, again, the funding that you give them is for senior repairs. And only for senior repair programs. So,
but not really, because it's now he's going to direct the whole deal.
But he can only use this money for senior repairs. So they hire a person who goes around the senior, if possible, pays for the materials, and the person helps do not major but minor repairs to help, you know, seniors' homes stay safe.
Okay. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I see that as being a potential conflict in the future, because I know that Carol has to recuse herself from everything that involves INHS. I don't see how I guess one is just a completely separate entity from the other that I see, and I don't understand how we can merge them without, like, literally merge. It seems like they're literally merged now. So I don't know.
They don't refer to it as a merger because they're both agencies are keeping their identity. They will both submit applications to the state for funding under both two different names.
A couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
When you talked about the senior repair programs, housing, is that something TC Action also does? They used to have a program like that.
They had a weatherization program that they had funding for, but I don't believe they did senior repair programs specifically.
A more general question for you and actually for both of you as the next portion of the budget comes up. We're hearing a lot of talk about $15 an hour for wages, and just as I've thought about that a little bit, it looks like to me that not-for-profits would get hit fairly hard by that. 2 years ago, the county did a study on living wage for only our contracts, and it would have cost us $2 million to bring those up to the current level, $14 an hour. Is that a conversation you're having within your agencies and looking forward to try to deal with that? And clearly, you're not going to be able to give me an answer tonight. You may start an answer, but is that something you're going to be thinking about if that moves forward?
We have, and because of the living wage, we last year and again this year when it went up, went through all the agencies to see how many people would be under the living wage. We were able to bring one agency up for a fairly modest sum of money last year. I think, you know, there are some agencies.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm just saying this, the living wage is $14.34, which isn't $15, but it's getting closer. No. And most of the agencies that go through our process do qualify. They would be, I have to look at the difference between 14 something and 15, but I'm going to be reviewing that with everybody in the next couple of months to see what exactly they plan to do for next year. And we know that there's a couple or agencies definitely will be the low. I mean, in terms of the daycare, which used to be the drop-in children's center, now it's a downtown Ithaca children's center. They will have people that are below that, and we knew that. That one we did look at last year, and I think it was about $50,000 a year to bring everybody up. And that was to the last year's limit, which was even lower than this year. And there's a couple of other ones. I think Southside struggles with salaries. I can't think off the top of my head, but there's a couple of other ones that are close, but it's not across the board, definitely.
And, you know, to follow up, I think what I'm thinking about is not only the agencies like you just mentioned, but others in the community that are bigger and may fall under this. And you know, we heard from them 2 years ago, so we know what the answer is. But, you know, the governor has supported a $15 an hour wage, and, you know, that's going to have a dramatic impact on local taxpayers one way or another.
And I think it'll be interesting because a lot of those people are people who are getting paid through state reimbursements. So I would hope, though I haven't always seen this, that they would come together and meet. The other thing we all have to keep in mind is what impact this is going to have on the clients that all these agencies serve. Absolutely. So I think we really need to keep a close look on that. If there are any questions, I do have one more point when I talk about the agencies, if I could bring up, and I don't even have a slide for this. So 2 years ago, the legislature voted $25,000 in one-time funding, contingency funding, I guess is a good way to look at it, that because we had a number of agencies that were kind of in flux around the budget time, and we didn't really know what their needs were going to be then. Ended up not using any of it, so we are very good stewards with this money. We had thought that it had been rolled over to this year, and we were wrong. And I know we were wrong because I actually listened to re-listened to the whole voting thing from last year, which is really interesting. And I listened to everything. It was discussed, but it was actually not voted on. So I would love to have that rollover, have that $25,000 be able to roll over into next year. This year we do have an agency who has a really had a security breach in their server. They have very sensitive data, and they're going to have to do some technical work around their server to get it up to the point where they can assure that their data is secure again. And that's, you know, it's a couple thousand dollars. That's where money like that would be incredibly helpful when they're to work with the agency. So I didn't know where to put it on a slide, but I'm just going to make that agency pitch as I go forward.
My sense is that it's a conversation that you may have to have with the county administrator.
We've had it.
Okay. Mike and then Will.
Are you looking for an increase in target, or are you looking for another one time?
Just one time.
Well, won't you be coming back next year with the same thing, that there might be other needs?
It would probably depend on how much we used. Yeah, I mean, having that kind of money, that flexibility in funding. I mean, we were really careful. We didn't use any of it. We asked people to try to find other ways to do things, and they did that first year. But being able to meet that kind of immediate need when somebody needs the money, it's really helpful. It was helpful knowing it was there. So I just thought I'd throw it out.
Well, thank you for that, Will. Go ahead.
So just to be clear, we're not talking actually rollover from this year's from this current year's budget.
No, it's not in this year's.
So you're talking essentially a discretionary fund that you could draw on without going through the entire process or coming
putting
to
it in the budget
or coming back to us for a formal appeal. Okay, thank you,
Carol.
It might be helpful to get a listing of the support for agencies over time. Ruth, do you have a chart? It seems like we used to get a chart. Am I missing it in what page it's on?
We do, and I apologize. We didn't give you the spreadsheet this year, but it's usually only it shows last year's funding, this year's request, and this year's recommended funding.
So we can
get that. We can work on that and get it to people.
Are we going to see any surprises in terms of ones that have either fallen off entirely or got serious?
No, it actually was a pretty quiet year this year. So.
Okay. And then I don't know if this is a question for you, but it might be worth it either later in the budget process, but or maybe it would fit better in a legislature meeting to have somebody from INHS Better Housing come and explain exactly what the two organizations do and what's working together and what is kept separate. So that might
be. I'm sure
Paul
would be happy to come
to do that. Wouldn't
talk to whichever body you'd like to hear that.
My sense is it sounds like a nice planning committee agenda item.
Well, no, I think that questions have come up here for everybody and some misunderstandings, for example, that both organizations do development of properties as well as first-time homebuyer and weatherization. There's a lot of, anyway.
Different programs.
So in terms of that organization, can you find out for me, one of the distinctions that Jonathan Wood advises me to use is whether the money in terms of voting and how to recuse myself from various portions of the vote is whether the money is going to go towards the salary of your particular relative. So can you find out for me whether this is program money or whether any of it will be designated to the part of the operating budget that pays the director's salary?
I can't.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Next part is...
I think I'll just keep going.
Yeah, go ahead. And that is on page 5, chapter 5, page 20, OTR 42, Human Services Coalition of Tompkins County. Go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, here is the budget. This is the 2% increase from the county, which turned out to be $8,202. Just to go over some highlights of this year, our workshops are still going strong thanks to your support. We always do between 600 and 700 attendees a year, and that includes 47 attendees from the 10 county departments. So, yeah, I can move right here. Homeless and Housing Task Force, and that is part of the continuum of care, which works on issues around homelessness, has really grown. We get about 40 people at each meeting, which is every other month. We have great topics. Thanks to some support from the legislature and the city and United Way, we've been able to hire a part-time person who has done a tremendous job in structuring the committees and the work that HUD requires in order to bring in the $220,000 a year comes into the county for these services. So that's been really great, and we're moving ahead on a lot of initiatives. We passed the 3,000 mark for the HSC listserv. Keeps going strong. And one of the one of our programs that has increased tremendously over this year is we now go into individual agencies to do consulting. And so we did 32 different consulting gigs for 29 separate agencies, and one of which was working with both Federal Housing and INHS to help that joining happened. We had 12,461 requests for services from 211, and the top requests are there on the board. Consumer services, the whole tax prep that we do, we help people sign up and schedule, and we screen them for the VITA income tax program. So that's embedded in the consumer services. Transportation, always a biggie. And organizational and community services, which includes information about agencies and departments and contact information. Healthcare, we do answer a lot of healthcare questions, especially with the new Affordable Care Act. So, and 211 is the contact that people are told to call for healthcare information. Other highlights, the 900 people got 1,200 prescriptions valued over $60,000 through the Urgent Rx. We doubled the number of people we help find health insurance, 659. With the New York State Exchange Marketplace, we have 2.5 full-time navigators who work on that program, and we actually thought that there was going to be, after the enrollment period, that we, when this first came out, we thought, oh, what are you going to do during the rest of the month? And they are busy all the time. People changing, life-changing circumstances, students coming in, they are booked solid.
Medicaid.
And, yeah. The Creating Healthy Places program, which is coming to an end, is to work with over 1,200 employees, 13 work sites to help them improve their health. And we, 75 people participated in our diabetes programs, and 450 were educated about health issues and services. Our major influences, we are losing 2.2, almost 2.5 staff positions. The Creating Healthy Places program was a 5-year grant we had from the state, and they did a lot of great work around the county for us. You know, you can lose funding, but people who are used to looking to you for those services and that kind of assistance, they continue to look to you for that kind of assistance. So that's going to put an extra burden on our existing staff as we're losing 2.5 staff. As you know, Betty Falco, who is our health planning counselor director, is leaving, and I would like to thank the legislature for the resolution and the lovely words. It was very sweet last time we were here, and we read it again today at her retirement party, and that's great. And we have Bev Chin, who's been with us for 14 years, taking over for her. So that's that program is solid. Regionalization is, we know it. The thing about regionalization is there are a lot more meetings and travel time that takes up staff time. You're going to Binghamton, you're on a lot of different, you know, conference calls, and it's just changed a lot the way people do business and the time it takes to do it. I mentioned the increased consulting and increased costs for 211 are mostly around data costs because the state is trying to get everybody around the same software system, and so we constantly, and then they're saying, well, now you have to do this, and now you have to do this, and every little tweak you make to this system that we bought costs extra money. We had one over-target request, and it was not recommended. I asked for actually an extra 1% from the 2% that was granted, and this is purely to keep staff. I have a tremendous staff, but because the 2% that we get from the county really only translates into about the average salary increase my staff has had over the past 5 years is about 1.4%. Because we have increased rent and in health insurance costs and other costs that have to be covered. So I made a request of an extra little 4% so I could give the staff a little higher increase going into next year. So I think that is pretty – whoops.
Questions for either one of these people? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Oh.
What are you waiting for, Will?
Thank you.
At our last Health and Human Services Committee, we heard a report from your Healthy Places, and I was familiar with all, had seen around the community all these different things, never really until that moment realized where they were coming from, and then came to grips with what it's going to mean not to have that service. So I don't know what, I guess we'll be turning to you to continue regardless, and that seems the problem.
There, I mean, some of the things, we staff a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And I've found out, as much as you would like to think that these initiatives will go on their own, they really do need somebody who's going to call the meetings, keep the notes, keep it going, move it ahead, get people. Yeah, it's going to be a big loss.
I was thinking this past weekend we had the Streets Alive, which is another wonderful event. But
came out, you know, of that program.
Yeah. Anyway, so. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay. Up next, OAR, Chapter 5, 25, page 25 and page 7, OTRs 36, 38, and 41. Hi, Deb. How are you? Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Hi. I think the presentation this year is pretty straightforward. I want to thank you all again for restoring our third client service worker in last year's budget. It's been really phenomenally helpful in handling the demand. Staff is actually this year was able to take the leave time they'd accumulated over the prior 3 years and take a day off sick without the agency coming to a grinding halt. So being back to three full-time client service workers has been great. Going through the budget. Now, how do I do this, Kevin? Oh, there. I just hit. You all have seen that number. I'll move to the next one. I just wanted to point out a couple major influences on our services. As you know from your reports from the Sheriff and Public Safety Committee, that the jail population has been really high. And you've had increased boarding out costs. I know over the last several months in particular, there have been really a lot. And we don't serve, OAR doesn't serve those individuals who are boarded out. We can't afford the transport, transportation to get there. Other jails have different rules. And so we haven't been serving them until they come back into our own jail. The 7 beds are not yet available, but will be available, we hope, by the end of the year, beginning of next year. I haven't heard the latest time frame. But we do think that we can serve those additional 7 beds with our current staffing of 3 full-time client service workers. We have we are fully staffed right now with the client service workers, a part-time bookkeeper, and myself. So those 7 beds with the third worker will be able to address that increased assigned counsel intakes and everything else, assuming that the jail population continues to be high. I don't really see it, not being continuing to be high, quite honestly. We're seeing huge, as many of you have heard from other things, but huge heroin addiction, increased numbers. We lost 5 different clients in the last 14 months to overdose, died from overdose. And so the heroin addiction is really driving, along with the co-occurring mental health disorders, is really driving our jail population. Our client service units increased in 2013 from about 9,500 to 11,700 or so. It's about a 15% increase. Those numbers aren't up there on a PowerPoint. But it's client service units are each different service we provide. It's not the number of clients. So what we've been able to see is that the number of clients increased marginally from about 900 and something to 1,200. But the complexity of their needs has increased substantially over the last 3 years, so that they may require more kinds of services that OAR provides. We're getting more referrals from drug court, for instance, to help with the inpatient applications for rehab. so that the needs of our in jail population are certainly more complex than they were when I started 9 years ago. So this is what was supported by the recommended budget, is the additional $106. Oh, the down arrow. I did it all right. And these are the two requests that are not supported. So I was really happy to hear there's $592,000 extra dollars. No, I know that there are many, many demands for that money. But part of that was, I'll talk about the smaller one first, which comes to a little bit of Jim's question about the living wage. OAR has been a living wage employer for 7 years. It was one of the first things that I wanted to do when I became the executive director of OAR. The OAR's budget had traditionally been balanced by workers, by its workers, through reduction of hours and reduction of pay in order to close the budget gaps. We continue to pay a living wage. And Jim, it may affect, and those of you who are concerned about the living wage, it's certainly going to impact some of the bigger agencies much more in a much tougher way than it will OAR. But when we first moved to living wage, it was a bite for us. I think where not-for-profits will continue to be much cheaper than the public sector employees are, is through the much smaller benefits package. Your fringe benefits rate is much smaller in a not-for-profits. So as a unionist, that's a very hard thing to say as a positive thing here. You know, my background was in union organizing and some other things, but it's true that we have a much poorer benefits package, and so we can probably continue at OAR to pay the living wage and just keep a lid on the benefits that we offer to our employees. OAR offers health. And last year we were able to do the first time ever 3% SEP IRA. And I'm not sure if we'll have money for that in the future. Staff understood it was a one-time deal. The other is a really more substantial over-target request, and it was basically probably premature at any rate. This budget was put together, as Kathy told you, we put this together in May, or it was due May 4th, and I was co-chairing the reentry subcommittee, which is presenting to the Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Board this week, this Wednesday, and I was anticipating that there would be recommendations coming out of that subcommittee for some form of support for discharge planning, for reentry coordination, for whatever we might want to call it. I'm not sure that, and the committee, by the way, I can tell you even prior to its presentation to CJATI, is not recommending a case manager for OAR. There will be recommendations about some staffing around coming out of that committee, but it's not identified where that staffing would occur. But I was thinking that since we do so much reentry work, that it would be ideal to have a case manager could help me really coordinate the various services. I think that down the line at one point in the near future, the legislature will have to be discussing what kind of a reentry transition program they want to implement for people coming out of our Tompkins County Jail. There's much more work that's been done on those issues around prison populations, people reentering communities from prisons. Other counties, however, are further ahead than Tompkins in reentry programs, but as Kathy mentioned, some of those come out of our upstate urban centers, which have gotten state funding for that, some of that work. But it is a question that you'll all be looking at, and I just jumped the gun putting it into this year's budget. Though somebody will probably be back to you asking for some kind of funding out of contingency to help continue this work. So that's basically all I have.
Question for Deb. Martha?
Hi, Deb.
Hi.
First, I guess a question for Joe. I thought I remembered that there was 2% increase for agency salaries in the budget.
There was a 2% increase to agencies. I don't know whether, so there was a 2% increase to the Human Services Coalition. I don't know how, if that got passed down to specific agencies within HSC or not. So I don't know if that came through to OAR.
So there's a general increase in target that went through HSC?
I think it did, right? I think there is a 2% in OAR. Kevin? Yes.
So that means that the OTR that's on this sheet is redundant. It's unnecessary, is what I'm guessing that. I didn't know that 2% came through, because if in fact it did, then that $4,000 is not necessary.
Kevin and I are looking at each other. We believe that the 2% did get passed through to OAR as a part of the across the board adjustment of agencies.
Given the way we in our world. OAR community, I'm sorry, HSC community agencies is comprised of two functional units, and we applied that 2% to each of those. So that's the basic. If you look on section 5, page 24, you'll see 6305, basic subsistence, and 6315, OAR core services. And in each case, there are a few moving parts, but in each case, they got what we call in our shop the agency bump of 2%, and then the sales tax number moved as well. First up when things looked good, and then down when things quit looking so good. So there's a bunch of moving parts there, but the 2% was applied to both of those.
So this request was put in without knowing that was going to come as a whole. Okay.
Yeah.
So it seems.
Clearly, because I mean, I'm not looking for 4%.
Okay. So in a sense, it's sort of included without the request. So, okay. And on the additional caseworker, Joe, did you have any kind of qualitative response to this, or was it just not enough money to fit
well,
it in? Or?
Well, kind of all of the above. By the time Deb and we talked about this, what she just described about the timing issue was more apparent, because we didn't talk until August, so that was becoming more known. Plus, kind of in my context, we did make a significant increase to OAR last year. If you recall, we took expected savings out of the jail and moved it to OAR. So that was, in terms of background, we had made a significant increase a year ago, so that was a part of my thinking too. And then we ran out of money. So it's all
okay. I would just say I am worried about the high jail numbers. I don't know what we can do that'll help. Look forward to the conversation on Wednesday that might somehow stem that tide.
I think it's beyond anything that OAR can do by itself. I think it is an interagency kind of and a whole societal kind of pressures that are pushing some of these issues. I will say that the change in state legislation where it created the charitable bail organization law and set us at a $2,000 bail limit has precluded us from bailing a handful of people that we would have bailed under the old. I think there are some justices who are aware that we can't bail over 2,000 now. Let me put it that way. And so that what is happening is that bails for certain crimes set by certain justices are set above our limit. And I'm not talking simply felonies. We're talking misdemeanors and violations as well.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Thank you, Deb.
Thanks.
Kathy Covert, right here, legislature clerk.
You can't do it.
It might be a tough gap getting back. There should be music for this. Hello, Ms. Covert. Welcome Hello. To the Tompkins County Legislature.
Thank you very much. Okay, the recommended budget maintains the 2015 level of service and staffing. A couple highlights. There are approximately 150 appointments processed annually for 40-plus advisory boards by office staff. It is a labor-intensive manual process that could be more efficiently handled through a software program. After exploring software solutions, we will be moving forward with implementing a program for managing the advisory board appointment process through Excella, the program called Boards and Commissions. This is a comparison program to MinuteTrack, the program we currently use to manage agendas, minutes, resolutions, and other legislative documents. The Boards and Commissions program will move the office to a streamlined process that will set up and track advisory board appointments and allow for an automated workflow for the processing of applications. The program can be set up to define required qualifications, term limits, meeting schedules, etc. This is the first program we have identified that is able to be customized and meet the unique and widely varied membership processes for each of the advisory boards. This program will eliminate redundant, time-consuming, paper-based processes and will integrate with our meeting management system currently used for agendas and minutes. The web portal will be a great benefit as well, not only for us with processing appointments, but also staff and county departments who work closely with our advisory boards and the public. Interested citizens will have access to a greater amount of information about the county's advisory boards, be informed of vacancies, and be able to apply online if they choose to. The office is planning to fund half of the program cost at $3,200 through savings in 2015 by personnel change. After a six-month trial period, the program will be evaluated, and if proven successful, a request for use of prior year funds will be made to fund the remaining 2016 cost. If we are unable to absorb the expense through the 2017 budget, the department will submit an OTR. In addition, the transition to the electronic calendar for making reservations in the Scott Hayman Conference Room and Legislature Chambers has gone very well with positive feedback being received both from departmental staff and the public. During 2015, additional county staff have been trained to make reservations. This low-cost program has proven to be a valuable tool in the office while providing an efficient service to the public. The office will continue to take advantage of new technology in 2016, including any enhancement to the meeting portal software to improve services the office provides. The full-time equivalence is 17, and we have no OTRs.
We are not allowing any questions. You're not listening.
Go ahead.
I'm kidding.
At $3,200 or I guess $6,400 for the software, that sounds like the least expensive software upgrade we've ever had. That's great if you've got something that can do it all.
We feel very good about this program.
Sounds
We're
great.
Excited to get it running.
That was a statement, right?
No, that was a question. I heard the inflection of a question.
Well, I wasn't sure what was going to be okay. All right.
No, it was okay. Anyone else? Yes, Julie.
The software you're talking about, at the present time, I think Marsha Lynch puts out notices when we're seeking candidates for certain advisory committees. Will that no longer happen?
That's done through the county's homepage. It wouldn't change anything that Marcia does.
Okay. It's useful. That's why I was.
Yes, sure. Definitely. Yes.
It would affect that.
Anyone else? Thank you. Get back up here, please. good job, Kathy. DSS is up, and if you look at it, is chapter 4, page 270, and both of the players from DSS are here. Please come forward. Thank you. Good job.
Hello.
Good evening.
So this is DSS.
Yes.
And what do I want to do this? Oh, down there. Okay. So you can see that our expenditures and revenues and net local are down. Major influences for us are we have staff reductions due to attrition, reorganization. We're not filling vacancies. The reduced fringe benefit rate has helped us. We have declining public assistance caseloads. And we had some funding streams that have caps raised. So as I mentioned, we have five fewer staff proposed in 2016. Oh. We're done. No OTRs.
Let me just make one comment, and then we'll have questions. A $47 million budget, and you're able to do it on one page. Then next year, the rest of the budgets have to be on stickies, you know, on a post, you know, and give everybody one of those yellow things and you write it all in there.
Well, that will be $1 million worth of sticky notes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, whatever. Questions for Patricia? Go ahead.
To what extent is it your sense that the fact that the budget is down is any reflection of the status of need for social services among our population?
I would say that some of what we're seeing when we're talking about lower caseloads are shifting our work to shift some of our individuals who are on temporary assistance to other assistance like Social Security benefits. We have a program where we work with our safety net population, and we work to get those individuals on SSI, and we've been very successful in the last couple of years. We have had some really good progress in working with people at the beginning of the case to find employment opportunities. So I would say that those caseloads are down, but the ancillary services like food stamps and Medicaid, those are still services people are getting even after they're employed. However, that funding doesn't come through the county.
Okay, so I hear you saying there are winners and losers in the aging population and the fact that some of us are getting old. And so your budget benefits. How would we know whether people who are needy, I mean, on the other hand, we see we're just tonight, you know, the jail population is going up. I mean, how would we know if people have just given up asking because it's getting harder to ask, or their benefits have run out, you know, or versus that they're doing better? What indicators would we use, and could you provide them?
I think we could take a look at some of what I was talking about, the individuals who've been able to move from temporary assistance to other services like SSI, and the characteristics of those individuals that might give us a clue. We have a program where we work with people who are released from the jail so that we're ensuring that if they need benefits, they're getting benefits. They're applying before they are released so that they can get benefits as soon as they get out of jail. So, you know, if what you're looking for is maybe some demographics, I can give those to you. I don't think it's an aging versus young people population issue.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Martha, and then Mike.
Again, I guess I would like a little more than the sticky notes, but you've got some funding streams where their caps were raised, or were there any that were lowered? Anything that was more concerning?
No, not significantly.
Okay. The Medicaid used to be, or still is, a major expense. Is that going down, our share of that going down?
Yep.
The local share for Medicaid costs, for the program costs, will decrease to some extent next year as a consequence of the Federal Affordable Care Act. There is a subpopulation of Medicaid recipients. I believe they're referred to as singles and childless couples, for whom the federal reimbursement rate has been increasing by 5% a year. I believe it is presently 80%, and next January 1st will go to 85%. Or it's 85% now, and next year it will go to 90%. Not quite sure where we are in the implementation. When it reaches 90%, it will stay at that rate. So anyway, there is an increase scheduled for next January 1st, and that increased federal share will result in a reduced local share. From one year to the next, on a calendar year basis, what the local share of Medicaid costs will be is a little bit tricky to determine. Not tricky to determine, but it's a little bit tricky to explain, because the costs are figured by New York State on a state fiscal year divided by the number of Wednesdays that fall within the state fiscal year. That is then translated into weekly contributions by local districts that then straddle two different years, and our payments depend on how many Tuesdays fall within our calendar year. So it can make things a little bit complicated. But pick a period, compare it to another period. At present, with New York State having capped local contributions toward the cost of Medicaid and the federal reimbursement rate raising for that particular subpopulation, the overall local cost will go down a little bit more for a year or two once that 90% is reached, unless and until the state or federal government again change the rules for Medicaid funding, our contributions should be flat from that point forward.
Okay, and thank you, Tom. Do you have a sense of sort of stepping back and seeing? I mean, this is great news. I think this is the first ever. Should I frame this? You know, in 13 budgets or whatever. What kind of do you have trouble spots ahead? Do you see other things that you may be concerned about?
Oh yes.
Okay. Well, can you tell us? You know what's?
There's the agricultural bill was passed a couple years ago, and there are some provisions in that will affect food stamps. But I'm not sure that's going to hit us next year. It'll work its way through, and whether or not what the effect will be. We're unclear. We're keeping an eye on that. We are seeing some fluctuation in foster care. Our numbers have been going up, and we are hoping that through 2016 we can make some changes in that so that we are lowering that rate, keeping kids safe, but being able to find other options, family options for them to divert them from placement. We are pretty aggressively looking at our employment program to try to ensure that there are employment opportunities or work opportunities for individuals, and that's always a struggle because we're competing with the rest of the population, and we have some individuals who are challenged to remain employed. So those are the things. I'm not sure whether that's going to affect our budget, but those are things that we're watching.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Anyone else? Mike, go ahead.
Before I ask my question, I just want to say we just got word that the day reporting's moved over to the new quarters over
yes.
there, and certainly want to say thanks again to you and all the staff, and certainly probation, for your cooperation during that construction. But I'd like to follow up on the foster care for children thing. What do you think is driving this? Is it the drug situation? Mm-hmm. Is it parents on drugs? Is it
yeah.
unemployment?
No, it's definitely the drug situation. Our family treatment court now has, I believe, 75 parents involved in the treatment court and about 100 children. We're not alone. It's across the state. It's some counties are calling it an epidemic. There's counties that you wouldn't think there would be such a problem. Putnam County is in serious trouble with this issue. It's out of control. But I think we're one of the few counties our size that has a family treatment court, which can really work with these individuals who are struggling and try to get them through the treatment that they need.
Do we see signs of that reducing our need for foster care?
Well, we are seeing a better turnaround in reunification. This last year, we've really seen some movement. I think the drug we're dealing with mostly is heroin. The year before, we were dealing with basalts, which were much worse. It was something we couldn't get a handle on, and parents were just walking away from their kids. With the heroin, we've got some good treatment programs that are focusing on keeping kids safe, but also making sure people are completing treatment.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Thank you both. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on the agenda for September 24th, which is Thursday evening. Airport, DA, Human Rights, Sheriff's Office, Solid Waste, Probation, TC Action, same place, same time, 5:30. Thank you all for coming.